Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, a discussion of everything under Australia's media and marketing umbrella. I'm your host and the editor of Mumbrella, Neil Griffiths, joined this week by Mumbrella's deputy editor, Nathan Jolly. Nate, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Again, stepping in for Mr. Adam Lang, who will be back next week. Actually, he'll be back next week and maybe you'll be there again because I won't be there. I'll be in the US, but you guys will be on ground, I believe, at the ComsCon.
Yeah, you'll be in Vegas, correct?
Yeah.
Trying to sell the Mumbrella rights, much like the NRL.
We'll find out next week about that. Don't worry about that. But Nathan, thank you for coming on the show, man, because we've had a big couple of days. We're recording this on a Wednesday morning, as we usually do. There's been a few big stories this week that we want to get to. I think the first big one that we should talk about and has been doing the rounds for probably the last 24 to 48 hours is around Shell Energy. So for those that don't know, Shell Energy is pitching its creative account after working with Brisbane-based agency Nous on recent campaigns. Comms Declare's founder Belinda Noble has warned that agencies may think that taking the account is helping to promote renewables, but in reality, quote, they will just be propping up a brand, doubling down on oil and gas, and damaging their own reputation in the process. Nate, your thoughts?
I mean, she does have a point. Shell are kind of, in terms of climate change, they're an easy target if you want to try to keep your green credentials. So I think any agency that's going to be wading into this will already have considered that.
It's an interesting thing too, because obviously Shell is one of the bigger companies in Australia. So from a business standpoint, winning that account is a big get. But obviously there is a lot of potential backlash there and you know, talks of greenwashing and people's intent of doing better or good business. If you're one of the companies or agencies running for this account, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It is the thing where you just have to weigh it up. And I guess this would have been the case back in the 80s and 90s with cigarette brands when the tide was starting to turn. And I guess you have to just make a decision. You just have to work out where your morals lie and what you can live with. And it doesn't even have to be a moral decision. It could just be a pure business decision. You know, going green works.
Do you think that this is like when we talk about the moral versus business, it is very tricky, right? Because again, the Shell Energy is no small fish. It's one of those things where if you do go for the account, obviously it is a very, very big get. But the other side of this is, you know, a lot of agencies will be in the hunt for this.
There's the 2023 F-List, which found more than 90 Australian agencies have fossil fuel clients on their books. And that number was 54 in 2022. So it's almost doubled, which is, you would think it would go the other way, but that doesn't seem to be the case. And again, this is a problem with greenwashing, because all these companies like Shell promoted its net zero target, and it's still under investigation for that, because these greenwashing claims, like, I know the ACCC go very heavily on it at the moment. Greenwashing, by the way, if you haven't heard that very buzz term, is when you purport to be greener than you are, basically. You say things like net zero and you don't live up to it in your actual practices. So yeah, if you're pitching Shell, you're not alone. There are more than 90 Australian agencies that have fossil fuel clients. So I guess you could say that.
Belinda Noble, you know, she issued that same warning last year. You mentioned the 2023 F-List. When that came out in September last year, very similar response. She told staff at agencies still working with fossil fuel companies to, quote, go and work for someone with ethics. Is it as easy as that, though, Nate?
I mean, no, it's not. Any corporate partnership that you strike, no matter where it is, there's going to be ethical issues. And I guess it's just up for each individual company and also the companies that work with these companies who you want to get into bed with business-wise. And I think the good thing, I mean, greenwashing is terrible, obviously, but the push for there to be more transparency around it is really good. So I think it's going to be harder to hide behind cloak and dagger stuff in terms of if you get into bed with a company that is, you know, mining or oil or any of the kind of no-no things these days log in, then it's going to be very obvious that you've done that. People will know, like, there's no hiding anymore, which I think is the good flip side to the focus on greenwashing.
We have reached out to Shell Energy.
We do, however, understand that Comms Declare made a complaint to ASIC back in November 2022 that outlined this same issue, and there's been no decision made of that. And ASIC have the Ad Standards Community Panel results where they dismissed a separate complaint against Shell. So I guess it's all still boiling.
And as always, make sure to keep an eye on mumbrella.com.au for any details on this story. Another thing that happened this week, Nath, well, actually started last Friday, and it kind of fizzled in over the weekend. Again, this is your story, so I'll let you lead it. But for those that don't know, on Friday, Channel 9 distributed a media release claiming it is leading audience share for free-to-air to TV for the first 3 months of 2024 by a wide margin, also claiming more than half of the total BVOD commercial audience during the same period. Since that time, Channel 7 have reached out to you, Nath, haven't they?
Yeah, they came to me with, quote, Nine's claims are all over the shop. That's what they said. And they basically said that the total TV and reach numbers for the programs are national, but the audience shares are metro. So they're kind of cherry picking which stats they did best in to make up a total picture that Seven are claiming is not actually accurate.
And when we were kind of going through this story, the funny thing, I was talking with you about it and you said, well, they're both right, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you value. Channel 10's also right when they say they are the number one network targeting a younger demographic. You know, you have to tag that on. So it's like Nine do have the biggest BVOD commercial audience. They, you know, they did win in terms of program nationals, but audience shares a metro. Like Seven basically said, they have a clear focus and consistent approach to how they do it. And they said, we are the fastest growing network. This is Seven. They said our primetime total TV audience is up 6% compared to Nine's 3% and 10 is down 11.6. And they just said, those are the facts. But in terms of audience share, Seven has 40%, Nine has 41.9 and 10 has 18.2. So Nine do have the biggest total TV share for the first 3 months. So I'm okay with them declaring it. Obviously, Seven weren't going to be happy. And it does remind me, do you remember when James Warburton claimed last year early?
Yeah, that was like, I think, funnily enough, that would have been like a month before I even started at Mumbra. I think that was September, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he called it 3 months before the end of the year.
Yeah, which was quite like that caused a lot of controversy at the time. And they were correct. They were the number one network for the year. But it just reminds me of that a bit. It seems like it's kind of a delayed response. Like if that's a game you're going to play, we'll play it too. It's all fun though, isn't it?
Well, it's always interesting when Seven and Nine particularly kind of are battling out. But it, to your point there with Channel 10 before, it is kind of cool seeing 10 kind of climb up a bit there. You know, we talk about the success of the latest season of Survivor, Ready, Steady, Cook's back. You wrote that great feature. Again, you can check that out on the Mumbrella website. Do you think 10 are coming into that conversation now when we, you know, it feels like the last at least 12 to 24 months, it's kind of been 7 and 9 battling for that top spot and who's going to win. Do you think 10 are in the race now or at least coming into the race?
Yeah, well, again, like back to the point, it depends what race they're running. Mm. Like 10 are doing a really great job at targeting those younger demographics. And they're also doing a really great, as you mentioned, the nostalgia trip. They brought back Deal or No Deal as well. They've brought back, like, they just finished, Survivor finished last night, and then they're going to bring I'm a Celebrity straight out. So they've got that local kind of content just back to back to back to back. They've got Ready, Steady, Cook going. These are all kind of fun, family-friendly shows, but they do skew young as well. So I think they've got a really strong kind of play this year. It seems that it's very kind of, and it seems to be working for them. Those shows are all rated well. Survivor went really well. Ready, Steady, Cook will go well because, yeah, as I said, I was on set and you can just feel it there. You can just feel that that's going to be one of those shows that just takes a year to climb and then is suddenly the top rating show in the country.
I had no idea that people were so passionate about it. Like you, in that feature you wrote, again, you can check on the Mumbrella website, you were saying people in the audience were like actively shushing the TV crew.
Yeah, because they were so caught up in it. It was like, we're at a theatre production. How dare these people be in the wings talking? And they're literally just like moving cables and talking about edits on the fly and stuff. But yeah, it just shows how captivating like Miguel and the team are. Yeah. And just another little nod to the website. On Friday, I'll have an interview about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which starts this Sunday. And that's with the EP of that show. And they've got a new host, Rob Irwin, which will be very interesting to see how he gels with Julia Morris. All right,
And
that's enough
obviously,
ad.
for those who haven't connected the dots, Robert Irwin is the son of the late great Steve Irwin.
Yeah, which is a perfect get, isn't it? For the like, if you're going to send anyone out in the jungle with snakes, that's your guy.
It does seem weird that it took that long for to bring an Irwin out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's, yeah, Bindi could have been doing it, but she went down the Dancing with the Stars route.
Are we allowed to speculate, or do you have any hot leads on who's going to be going into the jungle?
They wouldn't tell me at all. They were very tight-lipped. So we can speculate away because I have no insider goss. Who do
Well,
you think?
I don't really have any speculation. Bieber, Justin Bieber.
Yeah, that would be a good get. Bieber in the jungle.
I got nothing else. Another
Okay.
story. Again, Nath, you kind of led this one up. Again, we're recording on a Wednesday morning. The radio ratings came out, I think, Wednesday last week. So we're not gonna last Thursday, right? Okay, there you go. But yeah, we covered the radio ratings. Then you had a couple of interviews with some of the heads. So just to I guess summarize what happened last week.
Yeah, so there's been some big shakeups in the first book of the year, which is very interesting. So in Sydney and Melbourne, the two biggest markets, there's new top FM stations. So Gold in Melbourne and Smooth in Sydney, which is very interesting in terms of like their kind of, I mean, they're different networks, but they're sister stations in terms of being easy listening channels. So it's very interesting that summer people just want to kick back and listen to a bit of the Eagles or whatever. And then in Brisbane, Adelaide, and Perth, they've got like top stations overall. So B105 actually leapt over two other stations to get top. Adelaide Mix, and in Perth, it's a Mix as well, although those two are different networks. One's SCA, one's ARN. But yeah, it's very kind of unusual to see such a strong start to the year and so many shakeups. Like Ben Fordham beat Kyle and Jackie in Breakfast in Sydney. And then Nova jumped to number 2 FM in Breakfast with Kate Ritchie and Whipper and Fitzy. So there's a lot, yeah, a lot going on in radio.
And you had a couple of interviews with some of the radio heads in the last few days, right?
So I spoke to Duncan Campbell from ARN during the week, and he was basically focused on the Kyle and Jackie O show and getting that live. So you can read my chat with him regarding the Kyle and Jackie O show online. But I also spoke to Brendan Taylor from Nova, and he was very excited because they have kicked ass this ratings book. Smooth is number one in Sydney. They've got the number 2 Breakfast FM show with Nova. They're winning in Adelaide with Mix. It's just a really good book for them. And they spoke about the first week of Jason Lauren, who they poached from KIIS. I mean, I suppose KIIS dumped them, then they grabbed them from KIIS, and
Yeah, so
they've
when Kyle
started
and Jackie
them.
O got announced their launch in Melbourne, Jason Lauren, who were the Melbourne Breakfast Show, really essentially got dumped from the breakfast slot, was kind of just up in the air. Recently got announced that they're moving to Nova.
Yeah, and they have been on air. So I guess it would be they've done 11 shows as of the time we go here. I spoke to him after about a week, and they were very excited. He literally said, "We're trying to stay grounded by all the positive feedback and the fact that everyone's so excited." They said Jason Lauren have just like immediately slotted into the Nova team. He said he feels like they should have always been part of the team in terms of the type of show they bring. And he just basically said, after a week's worth of shows, you can hear why they're such a great team. You can really feel kind of that energy of like, you know, they've established themselves in Sydney with Fitzy, Whipper, and Kate, and now they've got a really solid Melbourne breakfast slot. So it's an exciting year for Nova, and you could really feel it in just how excited Brandon was to talk about it all.
And quickly before we go to a break, in previous weeks, we have kind of updated on the SCA ARN takeover. But in the last few weeks, it's really shaken up. So for those who aren't already aware, SCA knocked back the ARN offer ARN then came to the table again with a revised offer. So the offer was increased from 0.753 ARN shares per SEA share plus 29.6 cents to 0.87 ARN shares plus 29.6 cents. Nath, SEA issued listings on Sunday and Monday advising shareholders on these updates. What can you tell us?
Well, it looks like there's going to be a board spill. It looks like certain shareholders want to get rid of the board, and there's already been like a member has stepped down. They've kind of said that they will call an extraordinary general meeting, which will happen in May. So it's hard to say. Like SEA seemed pretty strident when it came to the fact that they felt like they were being grossly undervalued in the original deal. However, a lot of the shareholders seem to disagree. They wanted that deal to pass very quickly when it was made in October, and now it's what, March? That's a good 5 months later. They've been hanging on for ages. They probably wanted a quick payday. I mean, who knows? It's still up in the air, close to 6 months after the original deal was lobbed.
Yeah, you mentioned there that they will probably go ahead with an EGM in May. There's even speculation that it could happen earlier. But as always, keep an eye on mumbrella.com.au for updates on this story as it progresses. Welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast with myself, Neil Griffiths, and Nathan Jolly. Mumbrella has recently launched the new one-on-one podcast series where we're joined by some massive names. It could be in film, TV, marketing, advertising, music. All of the above. Recent guests include the Mumbrella 360 headliner and former Nike CMO Greg Hoffman. We've had Thinkabell's Adam Ferrier. We've had Hollywood and Australian legend Eric Banner. On the latest episode, I'm joined by the CMO of Fender, Mr. Evan Jones, a great man to chat to. Obviously, Fender is one of the biggest music brands in the world. It was so good to chat with him. And some of the campaigns he's worked on, I'm talking about people like Rage Against the Machine's Tom Morello, Red Hot Chili Peppers bassist Flea, and even Australia's own Tash Sultana. You can listen to the full interview with Evan Jones right now on the Mumbrella Cast tab on mumbrella.com.au or Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast. Before we wrap up, we do want to mention again that ComsCon is going ahead next week in Sydney. Tickets are on sale now. Nath, we mentioned at the top of the show, I won't be there, unfortunately, but you will be on ground. It's very exciting.
I will be. I'll be carrying around a life-size cardboard cutout of you as well, just so you're not missed. And I'll also be presenting some of the different forums, and I'll be moderating. I'll be around, so come say hey if you see me.
And I'm sure you'll be doing the podcast there as well, so I really appreciate the double hustle there, my friend.
Yeah, I'll be everywhere.
So again, ComsCon is set to go ahead at the Four Seasons Hotel in Sydney next week. That's the 27th of March. I recently sat down with one of the speakers, Third Hemisphere's founder and managing director, Hannah Marino, about her session called Is Woke Really Broke? What Comms Pros Need to Know About Wokeism in 2024. Check it out. Here's my chat with Hannah. Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the show. Obviously, your session is called Is Woke Really Broke? What Comms Pros Need to Know About Wokeism in 2024. So guess a little prelude to that. Let's just start from the top there. What does the term wokeism actually mean?
Hi, and thank you for having me. No, that's a great question. So wokeism, not many people know that wokeism actually has its origins in African-American vernacular English. And it was heavily used in Black Lives Matter movement to describe someone who's alert to racial prejudice. Then it quickly expanded to what we sort of know today to include a broader range of social justice issues, such as sexism, ableism, LGBTQI rights, environment, immigration, and more. However, probably what most people consider about wokeism today is the way it's used as a derogatory term. So it's now quite a highly misused term because it's been co-opted to be used by those railing against social justice, to be used as an insult. So it's rare that you hear the term used in good faith these days, as it's instead sort of most commonly deployed as a means of dismissing, disparaging, or denigrating progressive ideas and ideals, which means it's actually been weaponized against the very identities and communities it was originally created to protect. And that's kind of why I put it in the headline. I kind of cringed a little bit, I must say, putting that in the headline myself, because I personally really hate the misuse of the term. But given its sheer proliferation, the proliferation of its misuse, it is a term we need to take seriously. And I kind of did it with a bit of an ulterior motive. I wanted to lure in people who aren't just pro-social justice, who are going to turn up and hear a lefty talk about, yay, you know, pro-social justice issues. I wanted to kind of bring in people on both ends of the social justice spectrum, because there is something for absolutely everyone in the speech.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned right there, it's a really good point that in 2024, the woke term is very much, let's be honest, it's associated with being, very left. It really kind of is a derogatory term, at least for people who want to use it that way. Why is this such a pressing issue for the PR and comms industry, do you think?
You just can't ignore it. So, like, the notion of organizations existing solely to maximize shareholder value, I might age myself, that was something that was mentioned in my business undergraduate many, many years ago, as a serious thing. And I haven't come across that since. It's died. Organizations are not just there to maximize shareholder value. It's been replaced with this kind of concept of organizations as social participants. And not only that, like, inspirational leadership is also authentic. It's whole of person leadership, which inevitably requires addressing aspects of social justice, because they are deeply entwined with who we are as humans. So, you know, organizations are made up of humans. Customers are humans. Investors are humans. All our important stakeholders are humans. And I don't necessarily think anyone looks to organizations to solve social justice issues, but they certainly can't make them worse or ignore them entirely. Because even if a situation has occurred where there's sort of a bit of an outcry with regards to race or gender, something that's happened, even if an organization goes, oh, I'm going to stay silent on that issue, that's the safest thing for me to do, you know, just your very act of silence might make, you know, your staff might be comprised of people who are really hurt by that issue, and they might be hurt by your silence. So there are dozens of examples of spokespeople and brands being punished for being both pro-woke and anti-woke. So it doesn't really matter where your brand personally sits on the social justice spectrum, or you or your spokesperson. You just actually can't ignore these issues. You do need to take them into consideration. It's quite a fine line to tread carefully.
Mm. And I don't want to spoil the session or give it away, because if you want to see the session, you got to come to ComsCon next week. But is there a way, you know, to tread that line, do you think, between, let's just use something vague, like, you know, greenwashing, for example. You know, some companies can be accused of, if you do nothing about the issue, then you're complicit. And sometimes you can do something and it can come across as a token gesture. You're not being genuine. You're just trying to look like you're trying to fit in with what the majority are doing. How do you tread that line between being authentic and trying to do the right thing, but possibly the wrong way?
Well, you've nailed it with the word authentic, because, you know, the whole issue of get woke, go broke. Like, I thought, you know, my initial response to that is, oh, that's stupid. But I thought, well, my feelings aren't facts. Let's look at the facts. So I looked at the data on all these companies that had these sort of fake, they had these woke moments. You know, they put out an ad that shows what they're doing, or they want to announce that they've got this new green, whatever it might be. The only brands that get punished are those who are basically spinning bullshit. So we talk about, greenwashing. That's basically sums it up. These brands are not authentically, genuinely, tangibly ensuring that their business practices are absolutely in line with their comms messaging. Mm-hmm. And so they rightfully get called out for greenwashing or virtue signaling. The term virtue signaling also is misused quite a bit, but it exists for a reason. It's when someone puts out some social justice message without actually having that align with their business practices. And the term greenwashing is a great one. So I'll talk about that in the speech specifically, but the number of times it's been used in Australian media has absolutely skyrocketed over the past decade. And we're also seeing greenwashing lawsuits emerge. One of our clients is Parents for Climate, and they recently, last year, sued Energy Australia for greenwashing in their marketing collateral. And it's an ongoing case, but there are more and more cases coming out now. So it's not even just a matter of reputational harm. There's deep commercial damage that can be caused by people who say that they do a thing, but they're not actually doing that thing. You don't get to capitalize on social justice issues and think you're just going to get away with it by talking. You have to walk before you talk.
Yeah. And in ideal world for you, I guess. What are the three big, or possibly one, two takeaways that you want people coming to this session? First of all, who do you want coming to this session, and what do you want them walking away knowing or understanding or, you know, wanting to be better at?
I want everyone across the entire spectrum of social justice concern or interest coming. I know, I'm not sure if I made the title suitably annoying, that maybe the pro-social justice, which I very much am, might even be annoyed and not come.
Sure.
But definitely, I really do want to speak to those who think that social justice isn't an issue, because it absolutely is. And I do want to dispel a lot of the myths that people who are anti-social justice must have been bought into, must have bought into to be in that position. So that I want the wide spectrum to come. I guess the first lesson is, like, it is an issue. It's real. It will impact you. And I give plenty of examples about that. But there's also step-by-step processes you can take to navigate that. And I talk about it from the position of three different spokesperson personas. And, you know, we're dealing with personas. That's a simplified kind of way of looking at people. But they range from social justice averse, people who are absolutely against it. They either find it unnecessary, or they're just outright angry that they have to deal with this stuff because they don't see it as being a problem. The social justice curious, these are people who, you know, they might not have thought about it much in their careers, but they're kind of noticing that it's becoming a bigger issue. It's becoming, there's more discourse about it in their industry. The mood is kind of changing, but they don't know how to approach it, because maybe they've actively avoided these topics in the past out of fear of saying the wrong thing, or you know, thinking that anything other than neutrality will hurt them professionally. And then on the other end, you've got the social justice champions. And these people know all about social justice. They talk about it fluently. They're intersectional in their language. They're already talking in national newspapers. But they can get into problems when they're a little bit too strong on their stance. And I personally have a lot of experience with that. I can get quite quite passionate, and then I'll sort of do this diatribe, and then someone will look at me. I'll notice their face afterwards, kind of going, what have you hit me with? Sure. And there's lessons for them in sort of changing the messaging to be quite more, a bit more appealing to the other two groups, because that's what we want. We want to be converting people to the understanding of how important it is and how they can all do their bit.
That's very exciting. Hannah, we can't wait to have you at ComsCon. Before we jump out, obviously Third Hemisphere set for a very big 2024. Is there anything exciting coming up that you can tell the listeners about?
Well, I think we had it published in Mumbrella, it was. We've had an insane year. We went from sort of, we quadrupled, is that the number? Yeah, four times our staff. took on investment for the first time, which was an incredibly interesting process to go through for the very first time. We entered Singapore from Southeast Asia. So we were in Singapore last week, meeting all our new clients and a whole bunch of new journalists, and just discovering the amazing world that is outside of Australia. And yeah, we just hope to continue that growth. And we do want to push a little bit more into the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, because we see that as a growing opportunity space. It's certainly not going backwards. So it's something that more brands are going to have to take into their comm strategies in a risk mitigation kind of fashion.
Hannah, thank you again so much for coming on. We cannot wait to see you at ComsCon next week. Good luck with the session, and we'll talk after it.
Thank you so much, Neil. I really appreciate that.
Tickets are on sale now for ComsCon 2024. Head to mumbrella.com.au/ComsCon for more details.
And they are flying out the door, so get in quickly to avoid disappointment.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us. And Nate, thank you for stepping in for Adam Lang. As always, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Mumbrella Cast wherever you're listening to this episode from. And be sure to head to mumbrella.com.au for more details on everything we've spoken about today. We'll see you all next week.
Podcast edit by Abes Audio.